The following may contain NSFW content and is intended for mature audiences. Parental guidance is suggested.
In a world of sorry-ass social justice warriors,
politically correct panty waists,
and really fake news, there still exists brash, bold dudes with balls who tell it like it really is, really was, and really should be. This is the honest, raw, real Dude Say with Jones and Mike. Jones is a 40-something transcendental meditating hockey-playing vegan who's living the bachelor dream in the heart of the city. Mike's a 40-something beer-swilling suburban married father of four who's traded in motorcycles and marathons for a minivan. They say the things real dudes think and real women want to hear them say. No topics taboo. Nothing's off limits. No holds are barred. About everything from women to pop culture, millennials to race, news, views, family, money, and more. This is the Dude Say when they're uncensored, unfiltered, and unafraid. Join the show and say some too. 872-701-0999. Tweet at Jones and Mike. See and hear us at jonesandmike.com. This is Dude Say. Dude Say. Dude Say.
Jones, as a denizen of the fine city of Chicago, you correct me if I'm wrong in this statement. There is no more beautiful place to spend the summer months on planet Earth that you've been to than Chicago.
In the summertime, yes. No question. I mean, we have so few warm months worth even going outside to do anything, that once the summertime hits, you have to just cram everything into it. And that's what makes it great.
Right. So you count the Chicago summer as like June 1st to September 30th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, really. And if you really want to squeeze it down to when it's truly warm, you're probably talking from July 1st to September 30th.
That's right. I meant July 1st. You have recognized that it still can be kind of chilly by the lake and stuff. And so it doesn't really feel summery until July. And then it actually extends into, you know, past September 21st or 22nd, whenever the autumnal equinox kicks into effect.
Correct.
So, I mean, really, the sights, the sounds, and yes, even the smells of Chicago summer, unparalleled. Especially if you're downtown, you know, living the one percenter life like you, Jones. Like, you got the fireworks at Navy Pier, you got the street festivals, you have all of the amenities that Chicago summer can offer, including Nude Bike Week, which you attended this year as a nude bikist.
Not true.
No, this
not
is you.
Entirely.
Wait, go back to that. Wait, let's go back to that.
It's all dudes.
It's all dudes. Wait a second. I want to get the political statement here.
I don't know.
Here it is. The political statement during Nude Bike Week, is that a political event?
It is to a degree. It's a really... So the idea is... Now, I didn't know... You had posted something on our Facebook page, and I think our Reddit page as well, earlier in the week, saying, hey, here's an event you want to check out. And I think you were doing it kind of tongue-in-cheek about, you know, the Nude World Naked Bike Ride Chicago. And... which they've now, this is like their 14th annual one.
Oh, I like the little bike. I like those bike little bells. Those
right,
cool.
Yes. So
you kind of need that in the city. I think you need some sort of a sound maker, like a horn, right?
It does help. But you had posted that earlier in the week, and then I kind of forgot about it. And then I was eating down, like just off Michigan Avenue, just walking around. Last night was beautiful. Mm. And I'm walking around. And then all of a sudden, I see this cop on a mountain bike pedaling up Michigan Avenue. And someone yells something to him. And he's like, they're on their way! They're on their way! And I was like, they're on their way. Now, just like a week ago, U2 was in town and they stayed two blocks from where I'm at. And a lot of major sports teams stay down like right where I'm at. So I'm thinking to myself, like, are the Stones in town? Like,
yeah,
is there
really
a bus coming? Is it Springsteen? Like, what is this?
Right.
And then I turn around and then all of a sudden I just hear this wall of sound. And it hit me. I'm like, oh, my God, it's the Naked Bike Ride.
And so you, it like overtook you like a tsunami of flesh.
Yes. Yes. So all of a sudden, thousands of bikes come down Michigan Avenue, just going northbound. They have the, or they have all three northbound lanes blocked. They're just pedaling up the street. Dude, it was unbelievable. And I was like right on, I was right on the sidewalk. People started pulling out their phones right away and started filming it. Oh. I just felt too creepy to do that. So I just got the audio.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to just sit there as like people were naked, because specifically I was thinking of women that are coming up. And then here I am with my camera like collecting them.
Well, wait. So you're still holding the device up. So what difference does it make?
No, I held it to the side.
Video engaged.
It just looked like I had something in my hand. And I was only recording. I recorded what you're hearing is like that, whatever is on the iPhone, like voice memo.
Oh,
I did not record any visual.
Wow, you are such a gentleman. Who says that chivalry is dead?
It would have felt weird if it was all of a sudden nude old man Chicago. I'd be like, this is hilarious. But just knowing that there could be like a couple women in there, it would just seem, I don't know, it just felt predatorial, or just kind of like that guy looking through the keyhole at Aaron Andrews, like, gotcha.
That's right, a Westmont guy.
You
doing
know,
the town so, shame forever.
So, dude, just watching this wall of flesh come up the street
That's
was
right.
crazy.
Right. So how long does the wall of flesh wash over you?
10 minutes. It was 10 minutes for them to pass by in total.
10 minutes. And they're moving along at a, I mean, you're no one's walking,
pace.
But I mean, they're pedaling. So, I mean, it's like thousands of people is what you're saying.
Oh yeah. 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 It was full 10 minutes for them to pass. And they go all the way throughout the city. They go all the way up to like Boys Town, Lakeview, back down to Wicker Park. It's like they're naked and on those bikes for hours.
And okay, so I have to, my mind is blown by this. I mean, I've heard of this, but it doesn't. How is this legal? How can you ride
it's
your
not.
Bike legally? It's not legal.
Well, it is. Well, here's the thing. So full frontal nudity in the city of Chicago is illegal.
You've looked this up. You've looked into this.
Yes, it's illegal. But. So how they framed it on this bike ride was full frontal nudity is legal. Feel to take a chance as much, take as large a chance as you would like. And then I think everybody just kind of goes on this one event. No one's really going to bust you because, dude, people were like.
So you're telling me that my old lady could walk around Navy Pier without a shirt on and that's legal?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if they're considering that frontal. Any frontal nudity?
They're probably on the sides. That's a good point. She probably, yeah. I don't know that she could get away with it.
I'm not saying that. I'll let you say that. But, dude, this wall of flesh, I couldn't believe. First of all, you heard me in the video or in the audio saying, like, dude, it's all dudes. The ratio of anyone hears about this and thinks, I want to totally do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just do it. If you're a man and you're doing it because you think you're going to get to ogle chicks, fine, go do that. But just know that the ratio is going to be 30 dudes for every woman. It was overwhelmingly male. Now, there were chicks in the group, but it was overwhelmingly male.
Yeah, what they need to do is I think they need to do like what swingers clubs do. And like no single dudes can register for this. It has to be a couple or a woman, but no single dudes. Like that's how swingers clubs are. If they just have open, open parties, it's all a sausage fest.
Right. Here's the thing, I just don't think you're going to get that thousands of bikers. If you just kept it to couples, I think you, it's almost, I can only almost see it almost always being men that would do it. And it was crazy. Like people were full on naked, and it was early on as they first started coming up, I saw one guy and I just thought quickly to myself, he's about my match. And I was not
about your match. What?
Figure it out. And I was like, he and I are about the same. And I would
flaccid.
Definitely not be doing this.
Flaccid.
After him.
Yeah.
I saw 30. Here's where I was most shocked. 30% of the male riders that are on this ride, mushroom caps.
Really? Well, I mean.
Tiny.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you're not, like, I mean, I don't really ride a bike often, but I just got to imagine that it isn't not, it's not like an elongating activity.
Right, but would you do something for hours if you knew you were going to be publicly mushroom capped? I mean, mushroom capped.
Unless you had one of those seats. Don't they have seats where there's a hole for to so you don't get hemorrhoids and stuff? Like, maybe if there's a hole, maybe then, you know, you're not going to be, there's not going to be shrinkage.
But regardless, though, you wouldn't, you know, I mean, it would, if anything, wouldn't you be thinking to yourself, well, I'm never going to do this again. But everybody's just pedaling along, just having a great time. And really, they're going slow enough where you could stand up on the bike. You wouldn't have to be sitting down. But it was crazy.
I mean, did you see any, like, did you see any, like, really, like, attractive people?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and a number of the girls that were biking were cute. And there was only one fully nude woman. Most of the women went with the boobies out. I mean, almost all of them went with the boobies out, but then some would have pasties. But a lot of them went sans pasties.
Right. Like, that seems like a lot of work. The pasties.
I don't know what goes into it.
Right.
But the other thing, too, that I was noticing that, or I was thinking of, like, as they would go past, it's all these, like, nude asses on the bike seats.
Yeah, that can't look good at all. That's got to look horrible.
But then I'm just thinking of my bike seat. So in the summer heat, you're naked, sitting on your bike seat,
Jesus
pedaling
Christ.
For hours.
Yeah, the worst, man. The worst. You're going to, there will be sweat. It's got to just be nasty. That's this.
Yeah,
this
I mean,
the
even it's
got
to be a light glisten after 45 minutes of even casual pedaling in 85 degree heat, even if you're naked. Yeah. I just wonder what the psychology, too, though, is of the riders. Do they feel, look, I'm naked. This feels kind of weird now in the starting of it. But once you're up and running, there's such a wall of flesh that people aren't going to remember me, which is kind of true. I'm not going to stand out. So mushroom capped or not, I can go forward.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I can't even, like, so I have nightmares about being naked, like, all the time, dude. And I know that's pretty normal, like, oh, I'm naked and giving a presentation or whatever. But, like, mine are, they're getting graphic, they're getting weird. I'm maybe I should seek some sort of help or something. Like, and what does that mean again in, like, dream interpretation? What does the naked, public naked thing mean? Do you remember? Because you've done the dream analysis thing.
I do, but see, I've never had naked dreams. You know, where I was like, oh my God, I'm naked. What do I do? I don't know. I don't know. I'll try to look it up really quick here.
Yeah. So this is obviously, it's like a fear of mine, like being exposed in this way, like having my mushroom cap, you know, publicly viewed and then the humiliation that follows. So these people are like totally anathema to me. I'm wondering, like, do you practice for something like this? Like, do you go to Nude City, Indiana? Do you go on their, like, their 5K ride or something? Like, or is this like your first foray into public nudity? Is the naked
right.
bike ride thing? And that's when you actually, it's easier to do it that way when there's 2,000 people with you. According to the website, they celebrating freedom from oil and the beauty of people.
Well, their big chant as they would ride by was more asses, less gases. More ass, less gas. That's
jeez. Yeah, but I mean, come on. I can't believe the cops don't bust this down, dude.
Well, like, no, the cops are kind of organizing it. They're kind of front and back on it.
That's
just
bullshit.
Just making sure that people go along.
If I were down there, like, well, I never go into the city. And when I do go, it's going to be like with my family on an excursion. We're going to go to a field museum, then Millennium Park. Then we'll see the fireworks. And then we'll take the train home or whatever. And I'm going to have little kids with me. And if I was down there and I didn't, you know what was up, I'd be furious. Furious.
Well, and that's, there were a couple families that were, so this was like right around 8:45, 9 o'clock at night. I guess the ride starts at 8:30. So it is a little bit later, but it's still light out at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night.
Too light.
So people are walking around.
Yeah.
And there were a couple families that were ambushed. And then there were kids like, oh my God.
Don't say bushed.
This is crazy. Look at that one. You know, like,
jeez.
It was kind of crazy, but, I go, okay, so I'm on dreamcloud.com, and
yes.
It says, If you experience negative emotions when naked in your dreams, it may suggest you are feeling vulnerable or insecure. Mm. You may be afraid that you or your actions will be exposed to others. You may be feeling ashamed of yourself for something you said or did. The phrase "the naked truth" comes to mind, and so you may be bearing your soul to someone, or you are being open and honest with yourself about something. You may have recently revealed a secret about yourself to someone, or the dream may be telling you that you should. If you are trying to hide your nakedness, consider asking yourself, what is it you are hiding from yourself or others in waking life? What truth are you trying to deny?
Oh my God. Jones, am I gay?
That's exactly what I was thinking of as I read it. But I think 99% of men would read something like that in the way it was worded and go, gay? Crazy gay?
Gay?
I bet you that, yeah.
Well, okay. Hey, man. What am I hiding?
I don't know. That's for you to determine. You have to dig within inside yourself and figure out what it is that you are hiding.
Yeah, and it's reached like it's not even like, oh, I was in the grocery store and then I realized I was gay. I was naked. Freudian slip. Now it's really leaking out of me.
Yes,
the gay is coming out all over the place. You know, it's not even like that kind of a dream. It's like, it's creepy. Like the dreams are like, I was naked and then a car full of a family that I know, they pulled up and then their little kids were there. And then I realized I was naked in front of the little kids. Like, it's like that. So it's not just being naked. It's naked and then like, I'm afraid of children or something. Like, I'm afraid they're going to see me. So I'm running. I'm trying to hide. I'm cowering, whatever.
Okay. Did anyone ever expose themselves to you when you were a kid?
I don't think so. I mean, I would have. Apparently, I would have repressed such a memory.
Which is interesting because
and a memory.
It's funny that we're talking about this now because the other night.
No, there's nothing funny about this, Jones. Nothing.
I mean, funny, peculiar.
Yeah.
I was coming home. I was out. I was watching Stanley Cup and was driving back home, coming down State Street and right in Holy Name Cathedral. I look and there's one of those lit bus stops and there's this old bald man. He is seated down. He is sitting on the little bench and he is furiously going to town on himself.
Okay.
So could there be that kind of thing where you were at a camp walking around, turned the corner, and there was some counselor going AWOL?
No, because remember the homeless guy in Milwaukee when we went to Marquette midnight?
Yeah.
And he would, every now and then, there would be, you know, oh, midnight got arrested, locked up for a couple of days because he was masturbating in the bus stop on Wisconsin 12th or whatever. Like, that was like, I was like, what? That in public? What? I mean, that's, they gotta commit that guy. Like, you don't just arrest him and then let him out 2 days later on an I bond. What's that? Right. So, like, that really, that blew my mind. So, no, nothing's really leaping to mind. I mean, every kid walks in, I think, on a parent, and that's jarring and stuff, real jarring.
Yeah, I wouldn't count that.
So,
I wouldn't think that would trigger that.
I don't think I've seen any sort of deviant behavior, what you're describing. So this must be something internal on my side.
An emotional thing.
I'm afraid.
Hey, would you do the naked ride if Jill agreed to do it?
Well, I mean, and ironically, I spent much of my college years, much of my time in college naked. Like, people would come over and I'd be like naked in my apartment. So it was
weird. Do you think that was about?
I don't know. And that's why it's so strange that I'm like, kind of like, oh, I would never do that. And now I'm having these nightmares and stuff. Cause like in college, like it, and people were totally used to it. If they came over to see one of my roommates, they're like, oh yeah, his roommate's going to be naked. And they were fine with it. And I was fine with it.
Did you do it because it was empowering?
I don't know. I think I just thought, you know, this is what you do at college. You act like an asshole. That must have been my MO.
Right.
Because clearly I did all, like, everything just, everything you're not supposed to be doing, I did. And everything you're supposed to be doing, I didn't do.
Right.
So I just completely wasted my time and my parents' money. I wish my father was alive. I would apologize to him.
Hmm. That's touching. So, but
I owe him $50,000.
Now, I know that Jill would never agree to do this.
Yeah.
But if she came to you and said, you know, if you would do this, I think it would be funny if you and I did it together. Would you do it if she asked you to do it?
Oh, so you think that maybe my dream is that I have to get over the...
No, I'm not even talking about the dream.
Yeah.
I'm talking...
Putting the dream aside.
Like, in order to get more women involved in this...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You probably have to get more couples. And if she thought, you know what, it would be funny. You know, I heard what Jones was saying. He's right. There's so many naked people. No one's going to remember you. I would do this. Would you do it? I don't think you'd just do it on your own. But if she asked you to do it.
Yeah, and while I'm not against more ass and less gas... On a, you know, in its on its face, I don't think I'm on board with the ideology of these people. They seem incredibly leftist. I don't know if this man speaks for all of them when he rode by you. Yeah, like, what did he look like? Did you see that guy, by the way?
Oh, you don't remember. You don't remember any individual. You're looking at the overall spectacle of just naked people. You're not going to be like, oh, hey, Steve. You know, no one stands out. It's just a wall.
And are most
it's
people
just a wall of naked
I'm
people.
Imagining most people are like actually like bike riders. So they're like sinewy, veiny.
No, but most of them it wasn't like it was in terms of you're looking for like peak physical condition physiques. There wasn't a lot of those. There was a couple, but most everyone was like reasonably healthy. But it wasn't. And then there was a couple big ones out there.
So maybe similar to my body type where it's like, you know, in clothes, you look like you're in shape. Out of clothes, you can see that I'm pillowy. But basically,
there
okay.
There was a fair percentage of that.
Right.
Fair percentage of that. Even more would be a little bit better than that, but not quite flat stomach and ripped arms, or if they were women, not quite hourglass.
So, I mean, really, it's like, so we're obviously because of the nudity part, we're ascribing a sexual nature to this, but, you know, I would love to speak to people who had actually registered for this. Because I'd like to know, like, why are you doing this? Like, is there a sexual, like, thing? Is there a voyeuristic thing to this? Or is it really, like, no, a political thing where these crazy communists, crunchy communists, that this is our day to, like, let our commie flag fly?
I don't know. I don't think it's... I would say most of... Well, I don't think it's this huge lefty thing. I really don't. I mean, look, it's you're in Chicago, so every alderman's a Democrat. The mayor has been a Democrat for almost 100 years. So would most of the people biking in that ride be a Democrat? Yeah, probably. But it wasn't necessary. Of course, you get some of the Greenpeace types that are in this ride. But any kind of those public events, you're going to get those. Versus, like, what was the percentage of... you know, right leaning Christians that were in that ride versus, you know, left leaning Hillary Clinton supporters or Bernie Sanders supporters. You're obviously leaning toward the latter.
Right.
I think it really is just the thrill of doing it. Cause I've done those bike rides. I've done those bike rides that go throughout the city. I'm drawing the blank on the name of it. Critical Mass.
Yeah.
I've done the Critical Mass rides, and it is thrilling to be on a city street. You show up out of nowhere, and, you know, horns are honking, and there's kind of that thrill.
Right.
And you know I love that. Protests and things like that that pop up out of nowhere. So there is that thrill. So I think that's... it's that feeling up one more notch where you're like, and I'm naked and I'm doing this. Like that's the last next thing that you could add publicly in a group of people.
Right. Like, you know, like the Bike to Drive and, you know, the Chicago Half Marathon was on Lakeshore Drive, at least the year that I ran it. Humble brag. So that is kind of cool. You're like, wow, I'm running on Lakeshore Drive and I have no fear of death right now. This is amazing.
But that's also shut down for that purpose.
Right, right. So this is just people are taking it over lawlessly.
Like, you're just showing up in mass like a swarm of bees.
And like, so did you see any cars stopped that were furious that they had somewhere
to
be?
No, everybody was. In fact, I didn't even think about the cars. And then I heard someone behind me go, "Oh my God, look at all the cars. Look at their faces." And everybody's just grabbing their phones and filming it and laughing. And I mean, it's Saturday night. So like, for example, like to juxtapose the two rides, Critical Mass and Naked Bike Ride Chicago.
Critical Ass.
Critical Mass is on Friday night, so people are still trying to get home. Saturday, even if it makes you late for a reservation to a restaurant,
you got a good story.
You still have something to talk about.
Right.
It's,
you don't feel like eating anymore, but you got a story.
Right, right. Well, I don't know. I mean, you wouldn't be entirely put off food. The one thing that I did notice was of the people that were on the ride, not so hairy. Funny enough, maybe everyone didn't have the best bodies. Maybe all the men weren't as endowed as you would think someone would be if they were just going to be out in public. But there was not a lot of body hair.
Oh, yeah. Well, you don't just, have your... It's not 1977 Bush time. You spend the week getting ready for this.
I saw 30% of the guys out there were mushroom capped.
But you can't do anything about that. But you can trim your bush.
But I would think that you would not if you knew. Yeah, but when you're susceptible to that. And if you know that every guy knows where he winds up in terms of shrinkage. And if you knew that was a risk.
What are you going to do? What are you going to like fluff yourself halfway through?
But if you know that you're going to go into you're susceptible to go into mushroom cap territory, I would think you just wouldn't even do it. I mean,
Hey, man, I applaud these dudes. I love that they don't care. In fact, and they know. They know that they're growers, not showers. They don't care. And they know that it's girth, not length. At least that's what I am hoping.
I don't know if they knew that.
So the bottom...
There's no way of knowing it.
The bottom line is... thumbs up or thumbs down on Nude Bike Day in Chicago from you? Do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. I get a kick out of it. I understand the negatives around it, but I don't have to deal with those negatives. So I guess I'm just like, oh, that was pretty funny.
The one thing I wish that there would be like a Tour de France style accident, like pile up during
this. There were a couple close, but they go so slow, they're able to hit the brakes. And then it's kind of funny. I noticed like there's whatever it is, whenever there would be almost a pile up, like the guys didn't care. They laughed it off. The women, there was something about having to hop off the bike naked and hop back on the bike naked that really irritated them. And I don't know why. But you could just tell, like, I could see, like, when they were bunching up and it was going to have to be, they were going to have to bring the Peloton to a stop. I did observe, like, boy, the chicks really hate that.
Really? Well, yeah, like, it's mostly an internal organ until you have to do an activity like getting off a bike and then all of a sudden you are exposed. And imagine that goes through their mind.
I don't know.
But I wish there would have been a pileup. Sprockets and mushroom caps that close together.
Oof.
It could have been a career-ending injury in more ways than one for these folks. Well, so I come down on the side of no, I don't want my family being exposed to your naked body, man, even if it is well-kempt. That's not what I'm downtown to experience. So thumbs down for me, Jones. Thumbs down.
Not surprising.
These men need to become men again. They need to stop with the naked bike riding, and they need to get back to being men. There's a man boot camp.
Yeah.
That I'm sensing you are put off by, but I think that I want to go to this, dude.
Talking about of all the unmanly things out there.
Right. So man boot camp up next. If you need to go to camp to become a man, we'll tell you about it next. Shit Dude Say.
In a world of beaten down middle-aged men,
frizzy panty waists,
and triggered snowflakes,
two dudes
say the shit you say,
think,
and feel.
And now,
we're ready to blow this shit up.
Announcing Jones and Mike,
version 2.0.
Coming to a phone,
car,
or computer near you.
Live video and audio.
Anywhere you are.
Any way you like it.
Anytime you need it. Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go, or freeing men from the malaise of middle age, giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think. It's the shit dudes say that women want to hear. Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike. P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patreon.com/Jones and Mike. Support the show. Join our community. Get rewards. And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists. Dude Say with Jones and Mike. Get the show for not much dough. Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Jones, I kind of get a little upset when I hear about an idea that I've had maybe years ago. Like, it came to me in a dream. I jotted it down on a cocktail napkin, and then I never did anything about it, and then somebody actually does it, and they crush it. And that happens every now and then. Like, oh, I invented that thing. Oh, why didn't I ever do anything about it?
I came up with the Tesla.
That's right. Oh, this Musk guy, he didn't come up with it. I hit my head in the bathroom and I came up with the plans for the flex capacitor, but then I never did anything about it. So I, years ago, had the idea. Actually, I used to like watch Deadliest Catch, and I would go to my old lady like, I could do that job. And she'd be like, you couldn't do that. You would throw up. And I probably would throw up. And I was like, you know, the first 3 days I would throw up, but then I could totally crush being on one of those fishing boats. I could do it. I could do it for a month. And then I was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if you could actually go to like reality show fantasy camp and like be a commercial fisherman or whatever, or it's like it's in a safe environment so you won't die. Like it's in a warehouse, it's on a studio set, something like that. So there was that idea, and then that kind of morphed into, what if there was a man camp? Like, not for dudes who like are complete, you know, panty waste and like don't know how to do it, but you want to learn how to be a better man. So like in my case, I would love to like learn how to hunt and like learn how to field dress things. Like, I think that's something that like a man should know how to do. And I'm clueless. If you could learn automotive stuff, like not many people work on their cars anymore, but like, let's just pretend for the sake of argument that you could actually work on your car. It would be cool to be able to at least know how to do a brake job or something. So like that sort of a thing, like there would be like general man camp, and then there'd be like breakout sessions that you could sign up for. And this would be like a 2-week thing. So I had that idea. And then this week I'm reading in the New York Post, it was linked from Drudge. There's a thing called Warrior Week. That is an intensive program for male executives from tech, finance, and other high-pressure industries to learn, quote, the hidden science of accessing nearly unlimited sex, power, and money as a married businessman. Kind of sounded like I was on Degrassi Junior High there. Married. Sorry, I did my Woody Allen. I slip into Woody Allen every now and then. So it's like 10 grand. For the privilege of basically being tortured in Laguna Beach, California, every April as part of Warrior Week. So drills include being thrown off of a boat into the Pacific Ocean while blindfolded, dunked into a tank of ice water, visiting a cemetery where the men are told they will die in 20 minutes and must first write goodbye letters to their loved ones. I think that one's a little whack. I mean, they're all whack, but that one's like, well, they're not really going to kill you, so what's the big deal here? So this is all the brainchild of a guy named Garrett White. And I won't read the whole article to you. It's posted on our Reddit page and our Facebook page if you're interested in reading more about this, or you can just Google this thing. So this guy, Garrett White, in a nutshell, like, I guess was like divorced, bankrupt, and had cancer at like the age of 21, something like that. And he's like, wow, I'm a loser. I got to really find like a path here. Like, and his cancer, whatever cancer he had, like he lost all of his like teeth or something. So he's like toothless, like just a, you know, triple threat. Toothless, divorced, toothless, bankrupt.
Ugh.
Mushroom cap, afraid to bike naked. Like he, you know, if it sucked, he had it. And so he like the skill he developed was like real estate. So like by the time he was like in his 30s, he was like bringing home $1.5 million a year, had a hot wife, all these homes, all this stuff. And then like 2007 rolls around, 2008, and he loses like everything, like goes bankrupt again. And then from there, in like 2010 started this Warrior Week. It's always weird when like people who were bankrupt like teach you the success, you know, secrets. It's always kind of snake oil salesman-y.
Yeah, and to do it so shortly on the turnaround. So wait, he was bankrupt in 2008, but then launched Warrior Week Camp in 2010?
Yeah, I guess.
Did he divorce a second time?
No, I think he's still he's still with her or whatever. But basically, you know, rags to riches to rags story is this guy's story. And
to riches again.
To riches again, and only this time it's by charging like $25,000, $10,000 to $25,000 to these CEOs. Oh, sorry, it's not just every April. It's 10 to 12 times a year. So like every month, he's got all these like 35 to 55 year old CEOs coming in at $20,000 a pop, let's say. And then he tortures them, but then tells them how to be like stronger men, like at home in the office. Like, you know, basically the premise is at the office, you're the man. And then you come home and you totally check out, as we've on this show recognize that that's what dudes do, man. They just take a back seat to their wives. It's easier to let her run the show. She's in charge of the kids. I've called my wife the CEO of the house. Like, it's true. We do defer our power. If some of us never have any power. I'm subservient at work. I'm subservient at home. I need to go to this like Warrior Week. But at any rate, so that's basically his premise is you're the man at work. I was the man in charge of my 100 person company, my real estate company. And I was making $1.5 million. And I was like, you know, big balls, Johnny big balls. And then, you know, I'd come home and I'd feel like a little wimp. My wife was pushing me around, and so I had to seize back that power for myself and for her own good. You know, this guy's perspective is that women don't actually want to have a little pussy boy deferring to them all the time.
Right.
So you're put off by this concept. You won't be going to Warrior Week with me.
No, I will not. So, you know, when you posted that article and I checked it out, and I remember, you know, there was a video that was in the article
yes.
that I was watching. And that's the thing that really creeped me out. Your idea of doing a man camp of where, you know, you learn how to shoot a deer or you learn how to rebuild a 71 Chevelle or something like that. I get that idea in small kind of, those are more consumable ideas, like fix a car, shoot a deer. You could join any kind of like strength and conditioning, you know, CrossFit type thing. So those things I get, but the complete male overhaul, that seems like a lot to me. And then when I was watching this video, that's when it really drove home the idea that this would be more than I think I would ever need. Now, here's the difference, though. Like, so when they, in that video, they have that, there's like one section where they're making the men shout out again and again, like, I am here for my wife and my kids. I am here for my wife and my kids.
Yeah.
And like some guy is
here
like
it is.
Jacked
up. Here it is. Here it is. My wife and my kids. Awesome, they're running.
I know,
they're screaming, they're punching each other.
Yeah, you hear this bearded guy that's running up and down the line.
They look like they're training for like
grabbing people and stringing them in the face. Like, rah, 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 rah.
It is like boot camp, dude.
I would want to like punch the dude in. There's your man. Camp.
They look
punch
like
that guy in the face.
They look like ISIS. They have like white and black t-shirts with white lettering. It looks like Caucasian ISIS, dude.
Oh, it's. But see, that's. That whole thing, like, so the opening chant weirds me out because it gives me... Do you remember when Bill McCartney did Promise Keepers a few years ago?
Vaguely. You remember they were Oath Keepers, right? Aren't they cops and soldiers that are supposed to keep their oath?
No. Promise Keepers was this, like... Bill McCartney was a former head coach of the Colorado Buffaloes. Won a national championship with them. Remember, he had the fifth down...
Missouri, yes.
Using five downs. It was kind of a ref's mistake. They went out and won the national championship. After he was done at Colorado, he started this kind of Christian men's organization called Promise Keepers. And it was, he would go around and he'd do tours. And I know guys that went to these tours, like they would be at the United Center and like men would get together and like pray with each other and sing. And we're going to be better dads and better husbands. And guys really got enthusiastic about it, and they would come home and they'd go home and do all this stuff. Then they'd come to work and talk about it. And, you know, my wife, she couldn't even believe it. I came home and I got a bucket of soapy water and I washed her feet and I took care of her. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, so you went to the United Center with 20,000 other men, chanted and sang and cried. And then you came home and washed your wife's feet. Like, it just feels weird that you need to be instructed on romancing your wife or something like that, but that these guys were like showing up. It gave me a weird feeling, and I was just in my 20s. Now, not much has changed since then. I don't have a wife. I don't have kids. So there's just something that depresses me when I see that men are, and I see it, I won't say a lot, but I've seen it repeat itself again and again where men are like, when I go home, it's just, I lose my power. And it just, that is such a downer to me. But to think that what you were playing in that video right there in a warrior's, a man's camp is the counter to that is even more depressing. I mean, there's one part in the video where a guy, the bearded screamy guy goes up and he gets his two fists in this guy's shirt up under his chin.
And
I'm like, warrior camp is punching that son of a bitch in the face.
Yeah, there's a guy who actually like was an Iraq war veteran. He's like, this is the first place where I was ever called a coward or a pussy. But so they do. They like abuse you. But like it's, I guess, the people that, you know, have given positive testimonials about this place say this is exactly what I needed to snap out of it. Snap out of it already.
See, I don't agree with that, because here's the thing. You want to take back power. But the guy who allowed the bearded dude to get two fists up under his neck and scream in his face, that dude is your daddy for the rest of your life. And then you're going through a whole week of these dudes daddying you? That's crazy.
So I'm going to try to effort to get this Garrett White on. I won't be questioning his financial bona fides. By the way, when he's on, if he's on, but you will be questioning his methodology, I think.
If he even comes on,
he may not need us at this point now that he's been on Drudge in the New York Post.
Well, regardless, I looked up some of his videos. I found him. He came off, I don't know, he comes off kind of corny. There's dudes, you know, there's some other like man dudes out there that maybe I would get a bit more. I don't know. There was just something about this whole thing of like, and then what's the idea? At the end of the camp, you're supposed to fight.
You're supposed to
fist fight. And if you don't fist fight, you're not on our level. It's really weirdo.
Right. There are things like that on the website. They call it a brotherhood that kind of has like kind of white power, you know, connotations to me. When I see the brotherhood and stuff, it feels like, feels like kind of like a gang or whatever. I don't like that. There are some things I don't dig about this. There are some things he says in this article that I kind of get on board with. One of the quotes here, when you lose your identity as a businessman, you literally lose the power to create. You become weak. Weak, said White. It becomes awkward to engage with powerful men, so you spend most of your time with women or men who drink all the time. He said he was headed toward a second divorce as he relied on porn and drinking. Quote, I wanted to connect sexually with my wife, but I operated like a huge pussy. I might as well have thrown my balls into the garbage disposal. He searched for answers in Hinduism, haven't we all, and the writings of Eckhart Tolle. Totally. White left the Mormon church, that's a good move, and started going to sweat lodges, practicing Reiki, I never know how to say it, but Reiki. Like Reiki, sorry, energy medicine, right? And running ultra marathons, anything to help me understand why I felt so horrible, right? So I think that's kind of like the path, right? A lot of dudes 35 plus were doing that kind of whack stuff. In 2012, he launched Warrior Week, now employs 17 staffers. Quote, I like this quote, actually. I figured out that if we gamify life and you compete against yourself, it fucking works. I dig that, dude. He said his marriage rebounded. He now has a $10 million fortune, according to him. Who knows? And apparently, yeah, the weirdness of this week is that to channel your masculinity, and they torture you essentially, but I guess you come out on the other side feeling better about yourself, and as a result, you do better at home with your wife and at the office with people. I was just telling somebody this week, so I have kind of a jerky supervisor. Like, she's just constantly reminding you how she's in charge of you. She's horrible at being a manager. Whoever, they, like, appointed her, right? There wasn't even, like, an open competition. That's another bad thing. It's like, dude, you don't appoint somebody. You gotta, I think you give, like, it's an open competition. But at any rate, it's not even about, like, her being over me, but it's the way she does it that just really, it sucks the life out of you, dude. And so I was telling another coworker this week, I'm like, you know what? She's never been punched in the face. There's something about being punched in the face, even when you're 5 years old, that makes you go, okay, humans have their limit. I have to respect that limit and try to not come up to that limit. Because I don't know when the next time I might get punched in the face again. And so I think that it's important, even for girls, to have been punched in the face at some point in their life.
And know you can push someone too far.
The girl that I was talking to was like, I've never been punched in the face. That's the weirdest thing. I'm like, I'm not saying I'm going to do it. I'm saying that I think it's a good thing that she's like, have you been punched in the face? I'm like, thousands of times. And I deserved every one of them.
You've been punched in the face thousands of times.
Oh, hundreds of times. Probably in some fights.
At least eight.
I lost fights that I got punched 10, 12 times. So sure, you lose enough fights and it's hundreds of times. I ended my career on a loss. And you know what? I deserved it. I was a complete asshole, and the guy punched me in the face about 10 times. And I deserved it. He was right. The next day, I had the imprint of his class ring on my forehead. And I totally deserved it. And so now, I'll go to the limit with you, but at some point, I usually pull back and I go, hey, man, I'm just messing around, or hey, I didn't mean that, or hey, I apologize, because I know that a human being can punch me in the face at some point. So I think that's what this crucible at the end of this camp is all about, is how to respect people, respect your opponent, because people can break.
Well, so then would the guy, so in the video, when the bearded guy goes up and gets a hold of that one dude and is shouting in his face, could he have immediately passed the test had he just wound back and punched the dude that was holding him?
Yeah, did you see the size of that guy? I don't think you're punching that guy in the face.
Then what's a man camp? So, like, are you on their level or not?
So, yeah, I think that's what,
like,
that's...
If, at what point, if someone was outright attacking you, he played high school football, I didn't, I better not punch back.
So, like, look, bro, I think it's like any other boot camp. Any other boot camp is about breaking you down mentally and then building you right back up again in a disciplined way so that you're ultra confident in your abilities and in yourself. Okay. And so that's what they're doing, is that they're breaking down. And again, these aren't just, 17-year-old kids. These are CEOs. These are people that have some stature, I guess enough stature to afford $25,000 for a week in Laguna Beach, California. So they're doing better than most. So these are one percenters, and most people would put them on a pedestal. So you got to break them down and then build them back up again and show them that they could be more even than what they are presently. So I'm on board with this guy. Essential premise is the kernel of his idea. But again, some of the methodology, I'm not so sure about.
So, would you do this camp?
If I had $25,000, are you willing to loan me $25,000, Jones?
No, that's not the question. Would you do the camp?
Yeah, I could see doing something like this, absolutely.
Now, here's the... So, he did... You are one who is a fan of beer and intimate videos. He was critical of that. Would you go through this camp and quit that?
Of drinking while watching porn? Well, yeah, I don't think you go to something like this and then just slip right back into your old habits. Hopefully this is like you dry out from that stuff and you see that you can't continue.
Okay, but see, that's...
But I don't think I'm headed toward... He was headed toward a divorce because he was drinking and watching porn. My wife's actually in favor of it. It keeps me away from her.
Oh, I thought you meant in favor of divorce.
She may be in favor of that, too. We'll find out. I'll let you know in a couple of years.
Okay.
So that's the thing. Just, I haven't hit rock bottom. This guy hit rock bottom, apparently.
I think it's something that it's something that until I would ever be married and with kids and fulfilling those obligations, I don't think I could ever really get a handle on this. maybe there are other guys that would look, and clearly there are some other guys, but where if someone was able to come to them and present them with, like, I have the answers to what you need, they would be on board with it. But just the methodology and the screaming, anything that is just like,
it all comes back to the screaming for you. I just don't like, well, the screaming.
The men, just the men getting together on a camp, like men getting together on a camp to be men, like better men. It's just, I don't know. There's something that just is really, it's just a really weird feeling for me. Like there was, you know, there was those, I can't even think of what the phrase or the name would be, those, social dynamic organizations where it's like, here's how you get women, and we take you out on a group date, and then we get you to approach women.
They call that social dynamics, like pickup artist camp.
Pickup artist camp. I don't know why.
Social dynamic, right?
Pickup. Well, no, there's one that's something blank blank something social dynamics. Mm.
Okay.
So there's like an organization.
And we've talked about that in relation to Neil Strauss's book, The Game, where he supposedly he was a New York Times like writer who like or something, the New Yorker or some writer who like infiltrated the world, the secret, seedy underbelly world of pickup artists, and like became like one of the top pickup artists, according to this book, at least, like in the world.
Right. So, you know, there was an organization that came to Chicago a few years ago, and this guy was giving this camp or tutorial or something, and they were like in this public place. Mm-hmm. And one dude, and their whole goal was always like, always be alpha. You walk into a room, you see who the strong guy is, you put him down quick,
and
you establish yourself and blah, blah, blah.
In the game, they call that the AMOG, the alpha male of the group. You have to identify the AMOG, and then you have to neutralize him in the eyes. You have to diminish his standing in the eyes of the group.
So they were in Chicago, and they were teaching this lesson. And while they were teaching the lesson, some guy kind of overheard what they were talking about and said, hey, I got a question for you. And, of course, this guy's going to try to be an example and show, okay, here's a guy who's trying to AMOG me. I'm going to AMOG right back. Mm. And he goes, yes, I have the answer. You are fat. And the Chicago dude proceeded to beat up the pickup artist.
See, that's what I'm talking about, dude. That pickup artist had never been punched in the face. Now he has. He's better off for it.
Here's the thing, though. So you're going out and you're teaching, like, always be alpha when there's a skill set that maybe they don't have. And just lifting logs for a week and then thinking you're a street fighter, probably a bad move. So here's this guy going, always be alpha. It works for me. Watch group, watch class as I show you. And then he proceeds to get just smashed in front of everybody. And it's the same thing of like, it's just weird. Like this camp, like at the end, then we fist fight. Gentlemen, you've paid $25,000. Fist fighting at the end of week of like jumping in the water and lifting up logs will qualify you for nothing. You could still
get a certificate. You get a certificate and a badge, a certificate of achievement, and a little badge for your wallet.
That.
I'm sure.
I didn't know that.
You can flash your warrior badge. Yeah. You go back to Silicon Valley with your warrior badge. Awesome, and your certificate of achievement.
I guess I didn't. I didn't know there was badging.
Yeah. Oh, badges? You need some stinking badges. The men go to a nearby boxing ring, by the way. I don't think it's bare knuckle. They fight for 1 minute intervals, so doable for the average person, even after a week of excruciating torture. Quote, you went through the crucible with the man they're telling you to fight. But they say this man represents someone who is going to take everything of value. You have to fight for what's important in life. This is one of the participants. With the last name of Weed. Awesome. He recalled being barely able to chew food for a week after getting knocked in the jaw.
I mean, it's just bizarre. So this week I was walking to work, and as I was crossing Daly Plaza, all of a sudden, like, I just felt on my left, like, arm and shoulder, just this body going through me. And I turned around thinking someone was tripping or falling. And it was this little roly-poly business guy, and he had like a little leather bag, and he was like just buzzing right along in a straight line, and he just essentially like walked through me, And immediately I saw that and I started laughing because I thought, like, there was the area where I was walking was totally open and I was walking in a diagonal to get to the intersection. Mm-hmm. So the guy can see me from a long ways away. He could have stepped to the left and he knows that I can't see him. Mm-hmm. He could have stepped one step to the left, one step to the right, and still gone on mm-hmm. unabated.
Right.
But when he did this, I immediately thought of this kind of scenario to myself. And I thought, that guy walked off, like he made it intentional. Like, I am walking in straight lines today. I'm not moving for anybody.
That's tired of the world making me
because
move.
Because it was so unnecessary to physically hit me. And it was funny because it's like, dude, I'm a pretty chill guy, but I absolutely know people that would have just bludgeoned you. Like, what are you doing? Like, unreasonably empowering yourself. And some of this is what I'm taking away from.
I'm resting my case. You're resting my case for me.
How?
This guy, it's a dual-edged sword. On the one hand, you should be punched in the face so that you know to pull up and not push people to their limits. But the second other side of that is that you now know that you can take a punch to the face. So you get empowerment from that, from getting punched in the face. And then you also go, but I don't really want to do that. I know I can survive it. I know it's not going to kill me. I know the pain is temporary. I know that I'm strong enough to get through it, etc. But I don't really want that. So I'm going to take a path that that's less than that from now on. So that dude needed to be punched in the face.
Well, okay, but see, I still don't get that. Well, here's a couple of things. I still don't get that I don't think that's the message of going through this warrior camp then fighting, you know, doing 1 minute rounds. The lesson will be you will know not how to fight. And I do also have to say, like, out of everyone I know, you are the one who still gets closest to physical altercations.
But I stop.
I know, but most regular, you are the one who's most regular. Yeah, I was at the game and this one dad on the other side, I thought you out there, he's ready to punch me, man. I thought we were going to go to blows.
Hey, man.
The other night, you were just a couple months ago. Man, dude, I was playing poker at my buddy's house. I thought this guy was going to punch me in the face.
And then there was another game a couple of months later. And before I got there, apparently everybody who had witnessed it was like, we all came down on your side, man. That guy was wrong. So, like, what am I supposed to do? Here's the thing. That guy was trying to take down he's A-mogging. That's all that was. So I can be kind of out there and stuff. And then this guy decided to try to take down the AMOG. Whatever. And then and you know what? And I backed down. Yesterday, you know what? I had an altercation, not an altercation, but a disagreement with a coach. And I won't go into it in this place and time. But the bottom line is the guy tried to be Weasley. We were at a restaurant for the end of the season, and he sat down right across from me. And he knows that I think he's a liar, and I think he's a bad guy. So I acknowledged him, and then I said to my son, hey, let's go and sit over by those other people. And I moved. And people are like, I saw you move. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to play this guy's game. So, like, again, like, I know when to avoid conflict. As much of a dick as I am, Jones, I know when to avoid conflict. The guy's being weasel. He knows it's a public place. That's why he was trying to goad me and get under my skin. And I'm like, I'm not playing that game, dude. And I'm not going to ruin my time here with these people by sitting next to you, you little weasel. So I got up and I left.
So what?
I wasn't going to sit there and fight with him.
What is the takeaway lesson then? Of the 1 minute rounds of fighting.
I think it's that in life to achieve, you have to fight for what you want. You have to stand your ground, even if it's going to be painful, and you may lose, but at least you will have given it all and you will have fought. So, you know, I don't think it's bare knuckle boxing. And I don't think, you know, I think that it's probably taking people out of their comfort zones because most people, unlike you, have never engaged in pugilism. So,
I am a warrior.
You are exactly, dude, and you understand the benefits of it. It's like saying, "Why do you participate in BJJ?" Well, for fitness and for this, but there's a certain like competition and putting yourself up against other people and getting out of the box. Somebody could break your arm theoretically; they could choke you out. Like, there's a you kind of are. You tell me. Like, why do you participate in it? It seems actually very similar to this crucible thing. Pushing yourself to the limits of physical stamina, exertion, and also competing with another man or another human.
Right. Yeah, there's a little bit of a distinction. You could be competing with anybody, so you are competing with another human.
I said human, sure. So it's, so the same could be said about BJJ practitioners. What do you get out of it from a confidence and mental standpoint, an emotional standpoint? You get something out of it. It isn't just about fitness. If it was, you'd go on an elliptical.
Right. No. I understand that. But what I'm saying is when I'm watching this in action, the exact opposite is, if anything, it's controlling a situation, but it's not attacking a situation. It's handling a situation. It's not panicking. It's controlling a situation. And there's also not this like completely aggressive chanting, "I am a man," shouting in someone's face. There's that's, if anything, it renders all of that as useless.
Okay. All right. And I
that you
point
just calmly
to, point well taken.
Situation.
So certain, different paths to the same destination, if you ask me. These guys, again, for marketing reasons and stuff, like, look, if they were like, it's very zen here, and we do practice blah, 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 but it's very chill. Like, maybe that wouldn't have tested as well and wouldn't produce the same results. I think that this, has a certain appeal to some people, and what you do has a certain appeal to other people.
I also think, too, in the video, there's like around the 120 marker for all the fighting and the lifting. Like, if you go to that point in the video, they get together at one point and they're all like hugging and crying together.
Oh, wait, I didn't see that.
Go to about the 120 minute mark, and they're all just like, you did it.
Let's see. Hold on.
It's pretty weird.
Apply now. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see that, dude.
Back up maybe to 115.
Yeah. Apply now for one of 12 limited seats. Now they're all looking a little solemn. They're all walking together with books in their hand. It looks like ISIS. Very strange. Now he's, that guy just challenged the guy like you described. Now they're all hugging. I don't see the crying, man.
But I just thought, well, the hugging thing, okay, maybe they weren't crying in it, but that just also seemed like very unwarrior when they were all getting together and like hugging.
What are you talking about? What? Come on. This is a man.
Yeah, but I don't see anybody in like my jiu-jitsu class. Like,
hugging?
You did it, man. And then they like come together.
And that would be a problem if they did. You guys just rolled around together on the floor. It would be a big thing to hug after that.
But just the like hugging and congratulations.
Man, you're all over the map. You know what? You're right. You're not ready for Man Week, Jones. I don't know what you're talking about.
Man Week would break you. No porn, beer, punching it. Everything that this camp is not, it would crush you.
Yeah, the no porn, no beer rule, that's a problem, I think. So I won't be going to that. You're right. And the 25 grand, bit of an issue. All right, well, then maybe we can at least get on the same page with this argument, Jones. Warriors against the Bulls of the 90s. Who's the best team of all time? Assuming the Warriors finish off the Cavs, I want to get your take on whether the Bulls of the 90s could beat the Warriors of today.
In a world of beaten down middle-aged men,
frizzy panty waists,
and triggered snowflakes,
two dudes
say the shit you say,
think,
and feel.
And now,
we're ready to blow this shit up.
Announcing Jones and Mike,
version 2.0.
Coming to a phone,
car,
or computer near you.
Live video and audio.
Anywhere you are.
Any way you like it.
Anytime you need it.
Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go, or freeing men from the malaise of middle age, giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think. It's the sh** dudes say that women want to hear. Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
Patreon.com/Jones and Mike. Support the show. Join our community.
Get rewards.
And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists. Dude Say with Jones and Mike. Get the show for not much dough. Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Jones, one of the challenges of the finals week for the NBA is there's off days. And so the media, the national media, they don't have multiple series to talk about. There's no more, multiple storylines. It's just two teams standing, and they've got to kind of fill space, time, inches, etc. So some of it goes off into poppycock land, especially when you've had the same two teams in the finals, 3 years in a row? Yeah. Cavs, Warriors,
no,
3 years?
No, I think it's... Oh, yeah, you're right. 3 years in a row.
3 years in a row. And, especially given the drama from last year of the Cavs coming back, although they needed a lot of help to come back last year. But, hey, still got to tip your cap to them. LeBron brought the Cleveland the first championship in 47 years last year. So
that was 52, but yeah.
52, fine. I thought 1970 was when the team was founded. So at any rate.
Well, I'm saying to Cleveland. That was the big buzz, was Cleveland had not won a major sports championship in 52 years.
Right on. So, some of this, coverage gets a little bit ridiculous. You find out, Stephon Curry's favorite meal is, and it gets in all these profiles. But again, because they've had 3 years of this, a lot of these writers are just digging deep, and they're running out of things to talk about. So, but this week, one of the storylines was, could this be the greatest basketball team ever, the Warriors? Again, assuming this was all before that they lost game four. They were up 3-0, looking to close out Cleveland, and Cleveland just erupted for 137 points or something ridiculous. So the storyline has kind of died since then, but because the Warriors were going to be hitting rarefied air, obviously running the table in the playoffs if they would have won that game, and so the debate rose up, as is pretty common in sports. Would this be the greatest team ever? Could they supplant the '90s Bulls as the greatest team ever assembled? And the articles would kind of go through each matchup, right? And it starts off with Stephon Curry against Ron Harper, and it's kind of a downer. It's ooh, this is going to look ugly at the end of it. Of course, that's not going to go Ron Harper's way. Jordan against Klay Thompson, lopsided the other way, obviously Jordan. But then it gets interesting. Scottie Pippen versus Harrison Barnes. Dennis Rodman versus Draymond Green. Then it gets weird. Luke Longley against Andrew Bogut. Who cares? Tony Kukoc versus Aguadala. Then it gets into ridiculous land. But starting five against starting five. And that's an interesting debate, I think. Where do you fall down on this, Jones? Could the Warriors of today beat the Bulls of tomorrow, of yesterday, if we were in another dimension and the two teams could actually play?
In a 7-game series, the only chance that the Warriors would have is if we're playing under these current rules. But that's their only chance, and there's still a chance the Bulls would beat them even with the modern rules. Now you look at the game, you cannot touch an offensive player. So all of this stuff about... it's now ridiculous where you're seeing guys how easily they can get a triple double.
Right.
James Harden is not incredibly skilled. He'll be a Hall of Famer, but when you're looking at his talents, you're not. When you could watch Michael Jordan, or you watch LeBron James, or you watch Kobe Bryant, you could see them play and go, how do you stop that guy?
Right.
James Harden doesn't have that kind of talent. Yet he's going around and he's averaging 28, 29 points a game, 11 assists.
Well, and in the Western Conference, that's pretty incredible. He's not even in the weaker East. He was doing that against Western Conference teams every night.
The point is, you're not even, what defensive juggernauts is he running up against?
Okay.
Nobody can touch the offensive player. There's no question that, look at the year that Russell Westbrook had. He averaged a triple-double for a whole season. Are you telling me that under these rules where you can't touch an offensive player, Jordan would have had multiple triple-double seasons?
Yeah, no question. So it all comes down to the hand check.
That's a massive part of it. They're talking about... So when you compare the two teams, for me, the thing that is the big difference maker for the Bulls is, if you're playing under the 90s rules, the Warriors have no chance. Bulls outright win that. Now when you're bringing those 90s teams into the modern day rules, you have to keep in mind that you can't touch Jordan and you can't touch Pippen. Two guys that can certainly average a triple-double.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's 80 points a night right
rules.
There. Yeah.
You know, and so to me, when you break it down like that, it's – and then the other aspect of it, too, is the league is so much softer now. All these players, they're friends with one another. They're not real. There's really no such thing as a rivalry. If there's a rivalry, it's something along the lines of like a Matt Barnes saying something to like a LeBron James. But you never have true star players wanting to impose themselves
right
on other teams.
Which was the knock on Kevin Durant. He should have stayed
absolutely
in Oklahoma City, which has to just be like hell on earth staying there. So easy for someone to say to him. Oh, yeah,
yeah, but
being a millionaire black guy in Oklahoma City has to be awesome. But be that as it may, he should have stayed and been a competitor and wanted to do that's what Jordan would have done and what's what Charles Barkley would have done.
Right. You know, that's the thing. Like even when Barkley did eventually move to Phoenix and he partnered up with Kevin Johnson. He didn't partner up with a team that had like let's look at two of the biggest stars in these NBA finals now. Mm-hmm. LeBron James went out and won his first two titles when he joined the Miami Heat, who already had Dwayne Wade, who had already won a title and who had already been an NBA Finals MVP. So now he joins a strong situation like that, has the decision. Chris Bosh is a part of it. He was the other major free agent at the time. So you have these guys now, talk about a warrior mentality. These guys all go out and ride jet skis together in the offseason, decide who wants to play with who, and they're all best friends. And they all go around and they choose their ideal situations.
Yeah, and in fairness to LeBron, that wasn't even like the first dream team assembled. It was the Celtics immediately preceding them that kind of did that. Where they all kind of like, okay, we're all going to sign here. And join Paul Pierce.
I'm trying to wonder if that is how the timeline worked.
Or Pierce orchestrated it so Garnett and Ray Allen would be there with him.
Right. But even still, though, you were also talking of older veteran players that hadn't won it and that weren't matching. Like, these guys are constantly looking now to try to match two of the best five players in the league together.
Right.
That is kind of that I think is a very different thing. You know, like, you can say what you want about LeBron. It's great. He's been to, what, 8 NBA finals, 7 in a row. But it looks like he's only, quotes around that, going to win 3. And I don't feel sorry for him. I don't feel bad that he's on a 50-win team. The guy's gone around through his whole career, basically picked his teams, picked his coaches.
It's not like he didn't do it this time either. You know, like, people are saying, well, you got to blow it up. LeBron might leave. It's like, well, it's not like he didn't pick Kevin Love to be on that team. It's not like he didn't make them keep Irving.
No, he made them switch coaches, which is something that he always does. And don't give me this shit that he is not a coach killer. That's absolutely what he is. And then you have Kevin Durant. Like, could you imagine after the 89-90 season, Jordan joins the Detroit Pistons?
Oh, my God. Throw up in my mouth.
Like, what? There's something about, like, okay, you have to take this team individually and just compare them as a team. But when you're looking at Kevin Durant, I really kind of think, like, well, what's intimidating about the guy? Yeah, he can score a ton of points, but he's softer than baby shit. Like, physically, he is. He doesn't like physical play.
He needs man camp. These guys need man camp, Jones.
Well, maybe they do. That's the other point, though, too. When you talk about the modern game versus the older game, they always say, well, younger players, you know, the new players, they're bigger, faster, stronger. It's like, I don't think they were stronger. Like, these guys don't have to have, like, Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, those guys were ripped because they were in a more physical league, because they played in a league where their opponents knocked them to the floor and tried to stand over the top of them.
Yeah, that stuff punched him in the face. Yeah, right on, man. Right.
So to me, I look at it, if I were to do a player-on-player matchup, I would flip it and I would put Harper on Klay Thompson, Pippen on Steph Curry, and I would put Jordan on Durant. Jordan would kill Durant.
Jordan
would eat him alive.
On Durant.
Yeah.
Jordan was listed as 6'6", although I think that's in question. Durant was listed as 6'9 until this year when he's like 7 foot with shoes on. He now is disclosed, which everyone watching him next to like Blake Griffin, for example, has known that for years. So you're telling me that Jordan, at least it would be a wash? Those guys would cancel each other out. Or you're saying that he would hold down Durant?
I would think he would be able to hold down Durant and get his own. I have not. Durant is an average to negative defender.
Right.
Jordan would use his strength, and he would also use his mental game. He was a tougher mental competitor. He would look for ways to intimidate Kevin Durant. He would look for ways to get in Kevin's head. Kevin Durant does not like being challenged. He likes his points to come easy. Jordan liked to fight.
Yes.
I think the height guy. What's Durant going to do? Take Jordan into the blocks? There's no way. So Durant would have to, Durant's only chance is he would have to absolutely shoot lights out. And there's the old adage of you live by the jump shot, you die by the jump shot. And when you're going up against a team that can do it all, maybe not shoot as well as you, but they can do it all, and they put you in the position where you have to hit every shot you got, over a 7-game series, I believe you're going to falter.
And so then that leaves Rodman on Draymond Green.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. I mean, fine. You saw the guy handled dudes like, name a guy in the league that is like Karl Malone.
There isn't one.
He handled Karl Malone, without problem.
It seems like the Durant factor is what most national pundits have been like. Who on the Bulls is going to stop Durant? You can't. None of those guys. You'd put Rodman on. Oh, you'd put Pippen on him. Pippen's not stopping Durant. Are you crazy? 7-footer? Athleticism like that? No way.
Oh, I think you could get away with having Durant, Pippen on Durant. I don't see Jordan, Pippen, the names that we're throwing out. These are guys that continually competed and fought in all circumstances. Durant strikes me, he's very much like a Peyton Manning. When the circumstances are absolutely perfect, he's phenomenal. When there's a challenge, different guy. And I don't see him, finding himself in a real challenge. I don't see him really standing up and taking it on. I mean, even just simply his walking away from a great Oklahoma City team. You were up three. Last year, they were up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals to the Warriors. Then they lose 3 in a row. Rather than go, and Jordan had been in those situations earlier in his career where maybe he should have been the better team and it didn't happen and he worked to make it happen. Those are the things that you draw on late in the game.
Right.
Durant, to me, is a guy who can perform when he's winning going away.
So that's, this is obviously like an age-old debate or whatever. So when the Bulls in the 90s were hot, then it was like, oh, but could they have beaten especially when the Bulls were going after the single-season record at the time of 72 wins, was at the 71 Lakers or something like that had that record previously? Something like that.
Yeah.
Some Lakers team.
I forget which Laker. It was a Laker team.
Right. Jerry West's Lakers, right?
Yeah,
and so, at that time, we were probably debating or the national media was probably debating, although without the 24/7 intense news cycle and the inches and the space to fill, there was probably less of this. But I'm sure that the debate raged back in the day. And so I'm sure there were a lot of old timers who were like, well, Jerry West teams would take down these Bulls, but I don't think I don't believe that for a second.
No way.
The Jordan Bulls would crush those dudes.
Until Jordan really came into the league, that's when the game really changed, and then all of a sudden you really truly had complete players that were like 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", that could defend, that could shoot, that could dribble, that could play a total game. Like, even if you take the 80s Lakers, if Magic Johnson wasn't bringing the ball up the floor, then you had Byron Scott. And then after that,
right,
who could bring the ball up the floor? Like, players had such defined roles. They wouldn't be able to handle players that had the ability to take them away from the basket. So now, like, if you were even to compare these Warriors to, say, those Lakers of the 60s or 70s, the Warriors have a distinct advantage. First of all, I think Steph Curry's way too talented for Jerry West. And then when you're talking about like Elgin Baylor or any of these old time players, how do you handle a guy like now a Kevin Durant that could use his size and take you away from the basket?
Right.
So no, I don't think, if you're looking at like all time teams, I don't think you can really start examining. You can really only examine teams of the last 30 years.
All right, so then what about this debate? This also kind of cropped up this week as well. Best duos of all time. So obviously Jordan and Pippen have to be in the conversation. There's been discussion about, like, you know, Shaq and Kobe. Durant and Curry, obviously, of today, which is what's spurring it. I've heard a strong case for Magic and Kareem. And it's like, wow, that's actually a good one. Really good one.
I think that's it's either Jordan and Pippen or Kareem and Magic. And because I still have to go Jordan and Pippen because both were such plus defenders.
Yeah, that's brilliant right there. And honestly, a lot of the people who specialize in sports talk, I haven't heard that angle. No one's really pointing out Jordan being one of the best defenders of all time. Scottie Pippen probably being in the top 50 players of all time when they did that list like 10 years ago or whatever, right, because of his defensive prowess.
Absolutely. And the other thing, too, is like the compete level. Like, they loved to intimidate teams. They loved to go on a 15-point run, and when they would dunk on a fast break, they would, like, look for the guy that they beat and kind of stare him down and walk up the floor.
Right.
That counts. Like, that does count for something. It's not just – sometimes people, I think, use these debates, and then they just get caught up in the video game mentality of it. Like, well, Curry will pass the ball here, and Durant will shoot it, and then they'll do this. It's like – no, it's a different thing the first time Durant goes driving to the lane and Rodman puts himself – throws himself into Durant and puts him on his ass. So, and people aren't just going to immediately rush to save him. That's a different thing.
Right. So, you know, we're not being like the old dudes who go like, no, it was better in our era. Like, can you think of an example when it's like, no, today is way better? Like in football or in any other sports, in hockey?
Well, the quarterbacking.
I mean, clearly the rules changes in hockey have made hockey more open and better. In many ways, would you say today's brand of hockey is better than the Oilers brand of hockey in the 80s?
Yeah, because they're just all talented, all around talented, for sure.
And okay, so while we're on that, then Gretzky's scoring records in the 80s, when you couldn't have two line passes and so on, even more impressive, given the era he played in. Or because the players weren't as complete, as you just said, he wasn't facing the competition that he would have to face today.
He's not facing the competition he would have to face today. The goaltending wasn't as good. The goaltending actually really almost looks ridiculous as to how nowadays. But he was still so far and above his contemporaries. No, you still have to marvel at it. I think Jaromir Jagr, the second leading scorer, I think his total points are Gretzky still had more assists than Jagr's career total points. If I think the stat is, if Wayne Gretzky never scored a goal, he would still be the NHL's leading scorer.
Wow.
That's so over the top, you can't ignore it.